This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, June 8th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. Former FBI Director James Comey has spoken to the Senate Intelligence Committee about what he and President Trump discussed before Comey was fired. And while the investigation of the larger Russia election tampering matter is far from over, Cato's Ilya Shapiro believes that Comey's testimony didn't raise too many new issues.
Whatever side politically someone was on going into the hearing, they remain there at the end. So Trump's supporters, the RNC, are going to be spinning that Trump was vindicated. There's no evidence that came out of any wrongdoing. And Comey is the leaker in chief. And so that's the narrative. If you're against Trump, then you say, well, Comey did say that he felt pressured about the Flynn probe and Trump is acting erratically. And Comey essentially called him a liar. So there's plenty of red meat for both sides politically. Legally speaking, we really didn't learn anything. That is not a surprise. Certainly in open committee hearing, Comey was not going to reveal any classified or sensitive information. We'll have to wait for the denouement of the Bob Mueller special counsel investigation for anything along those lines. I thought going in that we actually wouldn't learn anything new at all, and I was slightly wrong about that. Some of the details of Loretta Lynch's involvement in the Hillary Clinton investigation, some of that was new, although some of it was published by the New York Times already. The fact that Comey himself orchestrated the leak of his memo about the Oval Office meeting regarding Mike Flynn, that was certainly new. And the fact that Comey understood Trump's reference to "I hope that you can make this go away" as an instruction rather than just kind of some aspirational thing. That's new. But at the same time, if he understood it as an instruction, why did he just write a memo to file and then not do anything rather than either resign or refer this apparent obstruction of justice to the U.S. attorney? So anyway, these things are all going to be left to Bob Mueller to find out.
So if Mr. Comey understood the president's hope, his aspiration, that he let the Flynn thing go, the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, is there any other way to interpret that besides it is an instruction? And is Comey's opinion that it was an instruction, is that going to be dispositive if this is to go to the next level of adjudication?
Well, perhaps not surprisingly, the law isn't clear. There's not a bright line of what constitutes obstruction of justice versus not. Adam Liptak, the New York Times Supreme Court reporter, very quickly after that moment located and posted on Twitter an Eighth Circuit opinion where someone saying, "I hope you will do something," was accepted as evidence of obstruction of justice. It doesn't necessarily mean that every time somebody says, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, "I hope you can make this go away," that it's criminally bad. And indeed, if Comey took it to be criminally bad, meaning pressure or an instruction not to do something, then why didn't he resign? Or why didn't he refer it to an investigator, whether within the FBI or a U.S. attorney or someone else? His explanation in his written remarks that we saw yesterday was that, well, Jeff Sessions, we thought that he would recuse, and he did 2 weeks later, and there wasn't a deputy attorney general at the time confirmed. There was an acting one who was a U.S. attorney himself who, you know, anyway, at the end of the day, Comey decided to keep this close to the vest. Well, if you're sitting on this obstruction of justice, that's not the sort of thing, you know, legally speaking, he has an obligation to not keep it close to his vest. So either he incriminated himself when he was incriminating the president, or it wasn't really an instruction. There's some third category between something that's just kind of aspirational with no intent and something that's criminal, some third category of, well, this is just Trumpian signaling, as has been called in other circumstances.
The questioning from some of the senators, I'm thinking specifically of Kamala Harris here of California, seemed to be getting at the idea that there ought to be more scrutiny paid to Jeff Sessions' role here. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm sure he'll be interviewed by Bob Mueller. I'm not sure What role Jeff Sessions actually played. I don't think his name came up that much in the hearing, certainly not by Comey. He didn't, and in his written remarks, Jeff Sessions did not play a leading role. And indeed, in that infamous meeting in the Oval with Trump and Comey, he specifically asked Sessions to leave. So sure, I'm sure Bob Mueller should look into Sessions' role, but it doesn't look like, based on what we've heard in public yet, that that Sessions has played a role in this particular instance. If there's something that Sessions did, you know, earlier during the transition, during the campaign, that's a separate matter. But at least with respect to anything the FBI was doing, Mike Flynn or otherwise, we don't see anything yet.
What do we know today about the role of the Attorney General, about the structure of the Department of Justice, and of course the head of the FBI, as they perform their roles somewhat differently than, say, the Secretary of Education?
Well, I think the number one thing we've learned is what Paul Ryan also said today in trying to defend the president, that he's sort of he's new at government. He's learning on the job. This is not the way that an administration normally operates. Specifically with the Department of Justice, I'm not sure if there's anything that abnormal that has come out other than that. This is it's a problem if senior appointees aren't confirmed in time, regardless of who's at fault for that, whether the nominations came late or the Senate is being obstructionist or whatever the case might be. But in these sensitive departments, what I like to say are the constitutional departments, Justice, Treasury, State, and Defense, it's just so important that the chain of command be fully set rather than relying on either civil servants in an acting capacity or otherwise people that senior leadership in up to and including the FBI director can't fully trust.
No, I guess what I meant was in the modern era, as statute dictates, are to what extent are the director of the FBI and the attorney general, as they have official constitutional functions, to what extent are they really not accountable to the president?
Oh, well, I mean, we are. I agree with the idea of a unitary executive. That doesn't mean that some people think that that means that the executive has a lot of power that can't be checked. Well, no. You know, you could have very little power, but it's all unitary, meaning that the president can remove people. And indeed, Comey fully accepted that the FBI director can be removed for any reason or no reason at all. And it's a political judgment ultimately of the American people about whether they accept what the president has done or approve of it. But we do see some of the problems of going outside of the chain of command. So typically, the FBI is independent. It's not completely independent. It's not some fourth or fifth or sixth branch of government. But the president typically doesn't instruct the FBI. It goes through the attorney general. And indeed, typically, it's the attorney general that makes that fires the FBI director, not the president directly. So again, I think this shows that even if you accept a unitary executive, that the executive branch speaks with one voice at the direction of the president, and that the buck ultimately stops in the Oval Office with anything that's done there, that all can get bollocksed up, as the Brits would say, if you go outside the normal chain of command.
Ilya Shapiro is editor of the Cato Institute's Supreme Court Review. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.